This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Turn up your volume. Because you're about to listen to The Sick Podcast. The Sick Podcast. With Tony Marinaro.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast.
You're in the ball!
Sports entertainment like no other.
Rejoint, on lui fait perdre la rondelle, une passe devant. Et c'est la bonne! Et ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Stanley pour les Canadiens. Le 23e de l'histoire.
You found the dogs! John, you found the dogs! He found the dogs!
And all together, they work the young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup!
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. LaBee.TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground. Your premier gaming destination. It's gonna be sick.
Marinaro on this Wednesday, April 10. How is everyone doing tonight? Thank you all for watching The Sick Podcast on YouTube, on Facebook, and on Twitter. Our weekly collaborator every Wednesday is Craig Button, Director of Scouting and Hockey Analyst over at TSN. He'll join me in just a couple of minutes, not before I talk to you about, of course, who brings you The Sick Podcast. And The Sick Podcast is brought to you, of course, by Energy Transportation Group. It's brought to you by La Bita TB. It's brought to you by Playground. And it's brought to you by Accent Insurance Solutions. I'll talk to you more about them a little bit later on. Without further ado, let's get to it right now. Craig Button, how are you?
I am really good, Tony. How are you doing?
Extremely well. Thank you very much. Extremely well. Okay, once again, what a night last night. Juraj Slafkovský with his first NHL hat trick. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. What can we say about him that we haven't said already?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot to say about Juraj Slafkovský over the next period of games, over the next years, because what we're seeing is a player that's just taken a greater hold of his game. He's having a greater impact in the game. And I don't think that people should be surprised by him doing this. What I think should be emphasized is that players progress and develop at different rates. And certainly Juraj, you know, had some struggles last year, had some struggles earlier this year, but all those struggles and the work that we know that he puts in has now produced this player and produced this these results that are beyond impressive. And certainly, you know, Juraj Slafkovský deserves a tremendous amount of credit. Certainly, the coaching staff deserves a tremendous amount of credit. But the story of Juraj Slafkovský is only going to become bigger and better. Like, we're only dealing with today on April the 10th. Of Juraj Slafkovský. So understanding, you know, how much more he is going to improve and impact the game in a significant way, beyond impressive.
Craig, he has 17 goals and 24 assists in his last 49 games. This at 20 years of age. Look, we've seen a lot of 20-year-olds have fantastic seasons, guys that went first overall, the Crosbys, the McDavids, the McKinnons, the Ovechkins of this world, the list goes on and on. We've also seen a bunch of other 20-year-olds who were also drafted first or second overall not be able to put up those numbers. He's not a generational player, but, man, he's hanging with the best of them.
Well, you know, you're right. Like, I mean, like, and we can all define generational. I don't think Juraj's a generational player. But when you consider, you know, Jack Hughes, who was a first overall pick, like, you know, physically, he wasn't anywhere near ready to do anything in his first couple of years in the NHL. You know, when I watch Juraj Slafkovský now, and I'd compared him earlier to a former Montreal Canadian, Claude Lemieux. And Claude was big and strong and aggressive and hard, and certainly a real important cog in the wheel of a lot of successful teams in Montreal and outside Montreal. But as I'm watching Juraj Slafkovský now more and more and more, I think I'm seeing more of Gabriel Landeskog in him, a player that, you know what Gabriel did. I mean, Nathan MacKinnon's having an unbelievable year, but that player that, regardless of what the challenge is in front of him, regardless of what opponents are trying to do, he finds ways to be productive. Now, he's bigger than Gabe, but, you know, that type of player on the left wing that can be such a significant factor in not only in the way he approaches the game, but in the way that he impacts the game. And Gabriel Landeskog, like a top player for the Colorado Avalanche, and certainly that's where Juraj Slafkovský looks like he's taking his game.
Yesterday, Kent Hughes was on with Frank Saravalli in the Daily Faceoff, and there was much talk about Slafkovský. And one of the things that caught Hughes' attention when he asked Slafkovský during the interview process, why do you play the game, or what do you like about the game? And Slafkovský's answer was something to the effect of, I love being on in the final minute, you know, up a goal, tie game, or down a goal. I love being in that situation, type of thing. And Hughes said, based on that answer, you know, what he and his staff's consensus was, is this is a guy of big moments. This is a guy that when the chips are down, when the game's on the line, this is a guy that wants to be there. He wants to be a part of it. He wants all in on it. And he went on to say that, you know, he gets the feeling that even though they haven't made the playoffs yet and they were officially eliminated on the weekend, that when they are going to be a playoff team, that Juraj has everything it takes to be a playoff performer. What do you make of that answer? What do you love most about the game? You know, I love being on the ice in the final minute, up a goal, tied, or down a goal.
Well, what I would say is it's an affirming answer to basically everything you'd watch with Juraj Slafkovský. If you were watching him play, he was playing in all those big moments as a young player for Slovakia on the national team stage, at the Olympics and everything. So all the answer does is affirm what you've already seen. I mean, not only that he was out there on the ice, but so why does he end up out there on the ice? Craig Ramsey's a dear, longtime friend of mine who was coaching him. I'll tell you why Craig Ramsey had him out on the ice, because he thought he could win with him. I say this all the time, Tony. Just watch how coaches use players. They will tell you more about how they feel about a player than anything else, by how they use them, when they use them, who they have them up against. In the Olympics, Craig Ramsey was using Juraj Slafkovský in every important situation, and he was really good, and he really excelled. So it's great to answer. You know, you ask questions. Like, if you hadn't watched it and you heard the answer, well, great, you're just rolling the dice. But that becomes an affirming answer to everything you had already seen from Juraj Slafkovský. And now, again, you asked me at the outset, what does this mean? What story is going to be told? The story is going to continue. this is not a story that ends now. He just turned 20 at the end of March. It's a story that's building. There's more chapters to it. There's more chapters that are going to be exciting for not only Juraj, but for the Montreal Canadiens. So when you think about the Canadiens, you know, playing like games that matter next year, hopefully in, down the stretch, in the playoffs at some point in the future here, sooner, everybody's hoping rather than later. These are all things that you've seen from Juraj Slafkovský. Don't be surprised when he does it. Be surprised by the players that do it that have never done it.
Anthony Martineau of TVA Sports put up a tweet yesterday. It was actually before the game. In terms of goals, 5-on-5, in terms of expected goals, the line of Suzuki, Caulfield, and Slafkovský is sixth in the National Hockey League. Or were before last night's game. I don't know if they moved into five, but at worst, they're sixth. You hear that. You think what?
Well, it's clear. Like, it's amazing that they can do that because Nick Suzuki's not a number one center. Cole Caulfield's had such a season of struggles. And Juraj Slafkovský, you know, he really hasn't been able to find his way in the NHL. You're not laughing. That's humor, Tony.
I was about to lose it. I'm like, is this guy kidding me or what's going on here?
That's humor, Tony. They call it tongue-in-cheek humor, okay? Like, you hear all the different things. I mean, Cole Caulfield's having what I think is a revelation season. Not just for being able to expand his game and do different things and not just be solely a goal scorer. And we're talking about a guy that I think is an elite goal scorer. Nick Suzuki, who I've said for a long time now, is a number one center. And now we have Juraj Slafkovský, who we're watching just grow. And like, you think about spring, you think about flowers blooming and trees coming to life. I mean, Juraj Slafkovský in the spring of his youth here with the Montreal Canadiens is blooming right in front of everybody's eyes. So when you watch these players play and you watch how they work together, what I call interplay, it's fantastic. Those numbers don't surprise me. Now, maybe six, maybe I thought they'd be top 10 or whatever, but this is a trio that has shown that they can be really impactful in the game.
All right. Okay. So speaking of flowers and the flower, the flower at age 20, had 3 hat tricks in his NHL career. And yesterday, when Slafkovský scored his hat trick, he made his way into the Montreal Canadiens history books. Pretty good company, thank you very much. The youngest Montreal Canadian to score a hat trick, Stéphane Richer, back in 1986, at the age of 19 years old, 283 days. Juraj Slafkovský, 20 years old, 10 days, surpassing the Flower, Guy Lafleur, who had did it once in 20 years old at 82 days. And then 6 days later, he did it at 20 years old and 88 days. And then also had ended up doing it at 20 years old and 143 days. Ryan Poehling's on that list as well. Alex Galchenyuk's on this list. And Bernard Geoffrion's on that list. So yesterday, Max LaPierre joined me, and I said, Max, if I say, and let's keep the chart up if we can, please. If I say Stéphane Richer, and I say Guy Lafleur, and I say Bernie Geoffrion, is there a common denominator? And he's thinking, he's like goal scorers. And I said, yes, more than that. And he says, look, what? I said, those guys scored 50 goals. Richer scored 50. He did it twice in 3 years, as a matter of fact. Lafleur scored 50. Boom, Geoffrion scored 50. Can Juraj Slafkovský score 50? Anyway, we went back and forth. It's a big number in today's NHL. He came back at me and said, do you think Nick Suzuki will ever score 50? And I said, well, I think Crosby and McDavid have done it like once in their career. So I said, I'm going to say no for Suzuki because he's more of a playmaker than he is a scorer, even though this year it seems like everything he's touching is going in. But Slafkovský, if Slafkovsky's a Rantanen kind of player.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
50? Who knows? I mean, he is a first pick overall, right? It's a first pick overall.
There's only the 99 players that have scored 50 goals in an NHL season. Nathan MacKinnon became the 99th on Tuesday night. 99 players have scored 50 goals in the National Hockey League. There's been some. Mark Messier only scored 50 once. Chris Kreider scored 50. Jonathan Chichu scored 50. You know, Reinhart and Hyman and MacKinnon joined the 50-goal club this year. There's no indication to me, watching Juraj Slafkovský play for quite a few years, that he is a 50-goal scorer. Now, let me distinguish between a 50-goal scorer and somebody who scores 50. I'm not saying it's outside the realm of possibility that somebody can score 50, but I don't see Juraj Slafkovský as a 50-goal scorer.
Okay. What do you see him as?
I've said 35, I think, in a good year. Maybe he gets 40, but I don't see him as that player. To score 50 goals and to be in that category of 50 goal scorer, you got to have a lot of different things that in your arsenal of skill to be able to do it. And maybe he does. Maybe I'm not seeing it. Maybe that's on me. But over the years watching Juraj, I've never seen an indication that he's a 50 goal scorer, that he's elite. And Gabriel Landeskog worked at becoming a better goal scorer, just like Juraj Slafkovský has worked, tips in front of the net, getting in and around the net. Now, certainly, if you put your, I mean, I think the world of Nick Suzuki, certainly like Zach Hyman, you get him into a spot with an elite playmaker, Connor McDavid, you put him in a spot like that. Could he score 50? Yeah, I think he could. But remember, I'm making a distinction between somebody who scores 50 and yes, a 50 goal scorer.
I got the perfect example for you. Chris Kreider has scored 50.
Yeah.
Is he a 50-goal scorer? He's not Steven Stamkos. He's not Alex Ovechkin. He's not Austin Matthews. Did he do it once? Yeah. Could he do it twice? Yeah. Zach Hyman did it once. Can he do it twice? Yeah, maybe. Are they going to be able to do it 5 or 6 years in a row like the Flower did it, or yeah, 9 straight seasons the way the great Mike Bossy did it? I hear you. Yeah, I hear you.
That's all I'm saying. And like, again, like he's worked hard at improving areas of his game, including goal scoring. Just like Gabriel Landeskog, and you and me have talked about Mike Kelly over at SportLogic, and SportLogic to me does just fantastic work.
They do.
So they went and showed where players work on their tip game and where they work on players around. And Gabriel Landeskog wanted to understand. So he started working on that area of his game. And certainly when you point out to players, hey, this is where your goals are scored from, this is where you might try to work at. So Gabe did go and improve his goal scoring. And certainly Juraj Slafkovský has worked hard to improve his goal scoring. And that's what you want to continue to see. But I mean, he's an impactful player, and it looks like that impact is only going to grow.
So speaking of my conversation with Max LaPierre last night, we started to talk about the future and the way it's shaping up for the Montreal Canadiens. And for the first time in a long time, they got themselves a number one line. We talked about their stats and where they rank in the National Hockey League. But Max said something to me. He's like, well, I think there's a pretty good chance that Caulfield plays with Doc next year. So I understood his point, because every team wants to balance out their lines as much as they can. Chances are the Canadians are not going to have a legitimate second line winger, or chances are they're not going to have two legitimate second line wingers to play with Doc next year, unless they do something extremely significant in the offseason in terms of a trade or a signing. But then I said to myself, the second he said that, the fan base is probably going to go nuts, because you have a number one line right now that it seems like has all the ingredients, all right? They are everything on the plate that you would want. You have the filet mignon, you have the potatoes, you have the vegetables, you got the peppercorn sauce. It's a, or you got even scampi if you want, or whatever you got. It's a beautiful, it has everything that you would want. But yet, Max, who's a former player who I respect a lot, he says, I think we got to break it up. Okay, scratching my head. So I said to him, I said, Max, I hear you talk very highly of Nick Suzuki. I hear you talk very highly of Slafkovský. And I said, understandably so. I don't sense that same importance given to Caulfield. So here's where our discussion went. I'm going to play it right now, and I'd love to get your thoughts on what was said. Caulfield an untouchable for you? Because no. I get the feeling the way you talk that Slafkovský for you is an untouchable. You correct me if I'm wrong.
100%.
Suzuki for you is an untouchable. You correct me if I'm wrong.
100%.
I even think you think Caden Gooley is an untouchable. Correct me if I'm wrong.
100%.
Caulfield is touchable?
I heard a comment. I think he's a guest on your podcast. The snake, right? Is that possible?
Yeah. Simo, the snake. They call him the snake. I call him Userpent.
I saw that on Twitter or X today, and I thought it was a pretty smart comment that to win, the Canadian needs Caulfield to be fourth or fifth best forward. And I 100% agree with that.
I don't agree with that.
No? Suzuki, no. Slafkovský, Doc, if he's supposed to be the player he is, and one guy, and so now he's already fourth or fifth, right? He's fighting for the third, fourth, or fifth spot, Tony. Like, he's not a one or two.
Maybe,
He's not a three. Let's forget the seasons where he played 10 games, but he played 67 games 1 year at 23 goals, okay? This year, he's got 24 goals in 78 games. Last year, he had a phenomenal stretch. He had 26 goals in 46 games, okay? Mm-hmm. That being said, Cole Caulfield is not 18 years old. He's going to be 24, okay? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I want to be honest to the game of hockey that he's a great sniper. He shoots the puck well. He's skilled. He skates well. People love him. I love him. But he's not halfway to 50 goals yet. He's halfway to 50 goals. Can we wait until he's at 40 goals before we say he's a 50-goal scorer?
Fair enough.
Because he's not an 18-year-old coming at training camp and we're saying, wow, this guy's got potential. He's going to score 50 one day. He's played in the NHL and he's going to be 24 years old.
He scored 26 goals in 46 games last year. Well, he was on his way when he went down with that injury, and he's coming off a shoulder surgery.
He's unreal, Tony. I'm not saying he's not a 50-goal scorer, but can we just focus? This year, he's playing well defensively. He's playing better. He has improved. He's got 60 points. You think I care if he scores 50?
All right. Okay. So there's a lot to digest there, I know. One of which is, when the Canadians are going to be a really good team, Caulfield's going to have to be four, fifth on that team. Cannot be in the top four or top three. And I said, well, maybe, but I somewhat disagree with that. And I brought up the example of Jonathan Marchessault. So I said to Max, I said, name me who you think Vegas's best forwards were last year. And he said, okay, Eichel, Marchessault, and someone else, and then Stone. And I said, well, you see, Marchessault's on that list now. And he says, yeah, but Marchessault, you know, the character, the full package of this or that. And I said, yeah, okay, well, I think he was alluding to, he thinks Marchessault's got a more all-round game than Caulfield. But then we talked about touchable or untouchable. For Max, he's touchable. Gouley's untouchable. Suzuki's untouchable. Slafkovský's untouchable. Caulfield is touchable. Your thoughts on everything you heard?
How old was Guy Lafleur? What year was Guy Lafleur in when he scored 50 goals for the first time in the NHL?
Ooh, I would have to say that Lafleur has the first three seasons pretty much on the bench under Scotty Bowman, right? It's much documented.
He had 20 plus goals. It was his fourth season when he scored 50 for the first time. Now, I'm not trying to compare Cole Caulfield to Guy Lafleur because it's not a fair comparison, and I would never do that. I'm just saying that everybody, right? And Cole Caulfield's only 23. he'll turn 24 halfway through the NHL season next year.
In middle of January. Yeah. So he's 23 years old. 3 months. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm not disagreeing with anything. I'm not disagreeing with where the placement is with Cole Caulfield. I mean, Tony, I love going back to the 70s and those great Montreal teams. Okay. So you had LaFleur. You had, and I'm just going to stay in the forwards because that's where Max was at. You had Guy Lafleur. Okay, he was the elite guy. Who was the next most important forward on that team?
In the 70s?
Yeah, when they were winning all those cups.
Jacques Lemaire.
Okay, who was the third most important guy on the team?
Bob Gainey?
Bingo. There you go. So it's not all about scoring. Right. It's all about, you know, different players that play different roles. That's the beauty of hockey. That's the beauty.
I could have easily said Steve Shubb, by the way, with all due respect to Steve, I'm not going to take away from his 50 or 60 goals, but
fair enough. But
everyone had a role.
You just made your point. You just made Max's point, too. If Steve Shubb's your fourth best player, your fourth most important player, is that bad? No, it's not bad at all. It's not negative. It's not anything to denigrate anybody. I mean, you had Mario Tremblay and Doug Risebrow and Doug Jarvis and Peter Mahovlich. Like, you had lots of good players. And that's the thing about the when you're building a team, it takes all kinds. I'm not disagreeing that Cole Caulfield, you know, has to be your fourth or fifth best forward. I'm not worried about that. But if Steve Shutt's your fourth best forward or your fourth most important forward, and he's scoring 60, sign me up. And if Cole Caulfield, who's really progressed in his game, really taken major steps ahead in my view and becoming more well-rounded, let's see where he goes. Now, when we talk about untouchables, it's such an arbitrary discussion to me. Right. Like, tell me what you're looking to do. Tell me what you're looking to do. Like, you know, when you say an untouchable or a touchable, you got to consider where everything is at. I'll share a story. Pierre Lacroix, and I always want to preface it because I love Pierre Lacroix. I knew him for a long time. You know, my father was friends with him. I knew him as an agent that he became in the NHL. And I love Pierre. I think he was great. And I'm so happy he's in the Hall of Fame. But when he first phoned me, I was the manager in Calgary. He asked me about trading for Derek Morris. And I said, oh, okay. Like, you know, like, I mean, I wasn't looking to trade Derek Morris, a really good defenseman. And he said, like, if I presented that to you, what would you be looking for? I said, well, if I'm going to trade Derek Morris, you'd have to start talking about Chris Drury. And he says, oh, Craig, there's no way. Chris Drury, I can't talk. He's such an important part of our team. Well, the dance went on for 6 months. We ended up trading Derek Morris for Chris Drury. So it all depends where you're at as a team. It all depends what you're doing. I had other offers for Derek. People phoned me about Derek Morris. It was a complete no. It was a complete no, not interested. I'm not trading Derek Morris. But when it becomes Chris Drury, oh, it changes things. And I love Derek Morris. I thought Derek Morris was a real cog in our wheel. Just like Pierre thought Chris Drury was a real cog in their wheel. So when you're trying to talk about untouchables, you're trying to talk about unmovable players, it all becomes dependent. So that's why I say it's an arbitrary decision. You've heard me say this previously on this show, and it goes now to Michael Matheson. If I hear Michael Matheson's available, I am phoning Kent Hughes every single day because I want Michael Matheson. And I said this, and I'm stand by it. The young defenders in the Montreal Canadiens system, and I'm talking about their top guys, Reinbacher, Mayu, and Hudson, they're at least two years away from being anywhere close to Michael Matheson is today. Better be careful, Montreal, if you start thinking you're going to trade Michael Matheson.
You know what? I got to tell you something, and I said this yesterday, and I said, if I hear people tell me that they don't think Matheson is that good again, because you hear some of that, by the way, in this market that, you know, he's a turnover machine, he's a liability, he's this, he's that, he's whatever he is, okay? You hear some people say that, okay? Are you ready for what I'm going to tell you right now? Today, Mike Matheson is ninth in scoring for NHL defensemen. He's ninth in scoring for NHL defensemen. Yes, the top eight in front of him, they're all plus players, and Mike Matheson is minus 25. But you know what? The top eight in front of him, They're all on playoff teams. And if Mike Matheson would be on one of those teams, he wouldn't be a minus 25 either. Like, Mike Matheson is ninth in scoring for NHL defensemen. Isn't that amazing, Craig?
Well, it amazing, maybe not amazing. What would the Pittsburgh Penguins look like with Michael Matheson? You talk about a disastrous trade for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Add his money, add his skill level. I mean, it's a disastrous trade for the Pittsburgh Penguins and a great trade for the Montreal Canadiens. We were lucky, and it's going to circle back to Bob Gainey here. We were really, really lucky in Dallas. We had traded Mark Tenorti, our captain, for Kevin Hatcher. We were looking for a right shot defender. You know, we loved Mark. Mark was a real, real good player for us and a real competitor. We were looking for a little bit something, so we ended up trading Mark Tenorti and got Kevin Hatcher. Kevin Hatcher wasn't a great fit for our team. It wasn't because Kevin wasn't a good player. It just wasn't the right fit for our team. Well, we got so lucky that Sergei Zubov didn't seem to be the right fit in Pittsburgh. So we end up with Sergei Zubov. Now, I'll be real quick on this story. You would have been amazed how many people were ready to tell us, little Zubov, oh, he's not that good. Oh, he's not that good. He's not that good. And we're like, well, wait a second here. And like, yeah, you hear these things from people you respect and you kind of go, okay, like, let's evaluate. You evaluate. No. Here's our guy. Bob Gainey, 1996, goes to the World Cup of Hockey as an assistant manager with with Team Canada. And Mark Messier comes right up to Bob Gainey and says, you're going to love this Zubov. What a great player. What a competitor. That was the worst trade we ever made, and the New York Rangers was getting rid of him. You're lucky. Bob Gainey, we know that Sergei Zubov went on to the Hall of Fame, was a great player for us. So I don't want to hear about if a player's not willing to improve in certain areas of his game, and I think that Michael has shown that he will improve and certainly maybe tries to do too much at times, put him in a better structure, and I think Michael Matheson will be just fine, just like Sergei Zubov was an instrumental part of our success in Dallas.
Rasmus Dahlin, Morgan Riley, Erik Karlsson, Miro Heiskanen, Devin Taves, Christopher Letang, Drew Doughty, John Carlson. The list goes on and on. Mike Matheson has more points than these players.
And those players you just mentioned are all good players. What I'm saying to you, Tony, and I think you concur with me, don't underestimate. And that was my story about Sergei Zubov. Don't underestimate Michael Matheson, because you know when you'll realize what you have is when you don't have it anymore.
I hear you. Yoel Armia. Yoel Armia. We went from all these players to Yoel Armia, but we did go to Yoel Armia. Yoel Armia last night set a career high for goals for him in the National Hockey League. Yoel Armia broke into the National Hockey League, played his first game with the Buffalo Sabres in 2014-2015, but played his pretty much his first season in 2015-2016. So here's a guy who's been in the National Hockey League for almost a decade, and he hits a career high in goals last night, 17 goals. The most that he's had since the 1920 season. What Marty St. Louis has been able to do with so many players on this team, like, you don't get it's pretty hard for anyone to get a coach of the year when, you know, your team doesn't make the playoffs and you finish like sixth last in the league or fifth last or whatever it is, right? But Craig, I take a look at what St. Louis done for Suzuki's game, for Slavkovsky's game, for Caulfield's game, for Jake Evans's game, for Yoel Armia's game, for Mike Matheson's game. And there are others. You know I'm the president of Marty St. Louis Fan Club, and I know how highly you think about Marty too. I think he's done an amazing job.
Well, you're not going to get an argument from me. I think he's been brilliant in being... You know, there's different coaching jobs that an individual undertakes when he stands behind the bench. And when he came into the Montreal Canadiens organization, the job that he was undertaking was about trying to help players gain a spirit, have what I call the esprit de corps, you know, with the team. And because the spirit of the Montreal Canadiens was broken at that point in time and trying to, and absolutely he's instilled that. Absolutely he's improved players. I'm going to go two places here with Yoel Armia, maybe three. The first place is Yoel Armia deserves a tremendous amount of credit for taking feedback from the coaching staff and the management group when he was sent down to Laval, and he and they said, it's not good enough. And so he went down, and it's hard sometimes. You've been an NHL player, and now you got to stand in front of that mirror and say, what do I have to do better? This is not what my plan was.
He went down twice, by the way. Went down twice.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. But you know, it wasn't. He went down because his performance was not acceptable.
Yeah.
And so he came back, and so impressed with the way Yoel Armia. I mean, he's always been a big player. He's always had the ability to create space and to make life difficult on defenders. He didn't always play that way. Now you're seeing him play that way, and he's having success. So great credit to Yoel Armia. Number two, and this is probably – I'll leave it at two because I'll tie in Kent Hughes and Marty St. Louis. Marty St. Louis, with what he's done with these players and showing, hey, this is what they're capable of. This is how I can expand their games. This is how they can grow within their games and become more valuable as individual players and ultimately to the team overall. That is impressive in and of itself for Marty St. Louis. But it's instructive for Kent Hughes and the management group to be able to have a coach who's shown you what players are capable of, so that as you go forward, you can make decisions with a greater confidence of what a player is rather than less confidence of what a player maybe isn't or is. That's the value of Marty St. Louis, the coach, in my view.
First 3-point game in the National Hockey League for Jordan Harris last night. It's another great conversation I was having with Max LaPierre, who's Max says, you know what? All the defensemen that are in the Montreal Canadian system. And he says, you know, Gouley and Jack Eye and Struble and Jordan Harris. And we saw Justin Barron last night. And of course, Mayu and Reinbacher are on the farm. Engstrom to come. The list goes on and on. He says, I don't even know where they're going to go with this anymore, because the more games we're watching here, and the more time Jordan Harris led all Montreal Canadiens defensemen a nice time last night, because they also, you know, skipped a few shifts from Matheson and gave him a break. They didn't need to play him. And by the way, Marty St. Louis yesterday, when the game was getting out of hand, he sat out the Suzuki line for three shifts. Mm-hmm. So, you know what? I'll get to Harris in a second. I see you nodding. Tell me what you think about that. The game's getting out of hand. The student is going up against the professor. Marty's going up against his former coach and John Tortorella. Tortorella's team was a huge game for them last night. There's playoff ramifications, trying to get in there for a wild card spot. The Canadiens running away with it. They score five goals in a span of 6:44 in period number two. And at one point, Marty St. Louis tells the Suzuki line to take a break for like three shifts and knocks about 10 minutes off of Mike Matheson's ice time in that hockey game last night. Your thoughts?
I think you nailed it. You talk about the student and the professor, and John and Marty have a relationship, a longstanding relationship. What I would say this about Marty, again, goes back to Marty's touch, his feel. It's number one, respect. Okay, the game got out of hand real quickly for the Philadelphia Flyers. And so he's recognizing that, right? Number two, his sense of what could happen and not trying to escalate it. And when I say escalate it, I'm not suggesting the Flyers were going to carry out some type of acts of revenge or anything. But what you have to understand is in a competitive situation, players are proud, and now you're getting waxed. You're getting waxed 6-0. And Marty having that touch of sense of saying, like, you know what, there's no need to rub it in their faces. That's the respect part. And then it also gives him an opportunity to get more players some ice time, relax some of the ice time minutes for other players. I just think it was just superb in the way he handled everything. And I again, it comes back for respect and understanding where his touch, that feel for the game, finger on the pulse. Marty had it.
I know that you were okay with John Tortorella scratching Sean Couturier when he did. I heard you, I had a chance to see what you had to say, and you went on record. I didn't like it. Okay. I don't know if the setback and the losing streak has anything to do with it. I don't think it looks good. Back on March 24th, the Philadelphia Flyers had an 88% chance to make the playoffs. Today, on April 10th, they got a 4% chance to make the playoffs. They gave up 9 goals in a game last night where they should have been the ones where there was no passengers whatsoever. And the Canadians actually could have had an excuse, and they could have had all kinds of passengers because they were eliminated from the playoffs. And, you know, everyone wants them to get the best lottery pick possible. Now that some time has gone by, do you think the scratching of Couturier, some of the post-game comments, and he's tried to make up for it over the last couple of weeks, even come out and apologize and said he was wrong and all that stuff. And he's actually been brilliant in some of the press conferences in the last couple. And last night he was brilliant again, because the old Tortorella would have probably, you know, cut it short and got out of there and went nuts. And he was very, very calm, because I think he's realized the urgency of the situation here. Now that a couple of weeks have gone by and they've lost all these games and they lost the way they lost last night, have you had a change of opinion at all? Do you think the scratching of Couturier and the treatment of Couturier hurt him down the stretch?
Not one bit.
Not one bit, eh?
Either you have standards or you don't. One goal in 27 games, Tony. One goal in 27 games is what Sean Couturier had. And John Tortorella didn't blindside him. John Tortorella was having talks with Sean Couturier. He was sitting with Sean Couturier trying to tell him, here's what we need more from you. Sean wasn't delivering. And the bottom line is, if you're going to have standards for your team, you better have standards for every single player on your team. And I don't care if you're the captain. I don't care how well you're liked. I don't care how well you're respected. Bottom line is, Sean Couturier was performing at a level that was unacceptable. And then if you're going to say now, because they lost with Sean Couturier coming back, I know he's hurt. He got hurt and everything, right? And that's the reason? Not buying.
Yeah.
Not buying. And if you don't establish your standards and hold the bar high for every single player, I'm not saying that Sean Couturier doesn't deserve a little bit more rope and a little bit more leeway before you make that ultimate decision, because he does. And I support that. But when you get to the point where it's enough is enough, sorry. The standard is, you've gone below the standard, and we got to make this decision.
I probably got the wrong read on this, but it seemed like, to me anyway, watching that game last night from a distance on television here from my studio, that I saw a team that were almost saying to their coach, you know what, we're not responding right now. And I saw another team who have a modern day coach who looked like they were having a lot of fun playing the game of hockey. Once again, I could be wrong. It's just what it looked like to me. Now, I've said this before. I'm not the president of the John Tortorella fan club. I just find semantics are old school and a little bit outdated. I do think the press conference 1 week ago was absolutely brilliant, and he shined in a very nice light. I also do think that he could definitely be up for coach of the year, because I don't think he's got a very good team, to be honest. I don't think he's got any goaltending. I don't think he's got much defense. With all due respect to Frost and Lawton and Poehling and Couturier, it's a very weak center line. Not a lot of depth on the third and fourth lines. I think the strength of their team is on the wings with Tippett and Konechny and Farabee, but I don't think it's good enough. But who's... Is he a fit, though, as good as he's done up until the last couple of weeks? Is a guy who wants to squeeze every little bit of juice out of that orange a fit for a young team that should be rebuilding?
So when you think about rebuilding, and all the coaches all have different personalities, and I believe that coaches have to be true to their personality. You have to, you know, what you believe in, what standards you, and you got to convey that. You got to communicate it. You got to hold people to account for that. I think that when you, to your point, Tony, about the Philadelphia Flyers, yeah, okay, an 88% chance to make the playoffs. They're 0-6-2 in their last eight games. They've fallen right off. We know that. But considering where they were at beginning this season and considering that they were in the hunt for the playoffs as recently as eight games ago and maybe even four games ago, and they've fallen off, I think we have to evaluate the period up to that point where the team was showing probably way more than their capabilities indicated they should. And that speaks to what you talk about with their talent level and their youth. And then you evaluate, okay, how were these situations handled? I've heard John take responsibility for maybe not handling things the right way. And certainly, you know, not getting his team into a place where they could handle some of these challenges. And that being said, the Philadelphia Flyers, I think, do have promise. I think the Philadelphia Flyers do have some good prospects in their system and good young players on their team that they're going to move forward with. Every coach comes with an expiry date. I don't care who you are. I don't care what success you've had in any sport. Every single coach has an expiry date. Some are shorter than others. Some are longer than others. Management has to make a decision based on What do we need? What do we think this coach can do? And do we need something different? Nobody's going to tell me that Todd McClellan's not a good coach. I think Todd McClellan's an excellent coach. In LA, they started out the year fantastic. Then they stumbled. Rob Blake made a decision that we needed a change. Obviously, you don't want to see a good coach or anybody lose their job, but that's what had to happen. It doesn't change the fact that what John Tortorella has done this year, I think, has been a really good record and something that's been really significant. Is he the right person moving forward? I don't know. I'll tell you this. And Max LaPierre played in Vancouver. I saw an interview with Kevin Bieksa where he said himself and Henrik and Daniel Sedin went into management and they said they wanted John Tortorella back and they loved what he did. Is John Tortorella going to be loved by every single player that plays for him? No, no coach is. But I think that that's where you try to evaluate, is he the right person for us at this moment in time? Is he not? And then you're going to have to make your decision accordingly.
All right, okay. So now we can get on to Jordan Harris when I started talking about him. 3 points last night. Once again, he just keeps on getting better and better. At one point, he was the easy guy for a lot of people to say, you know what, he's going to be the odd man out because he doesn't have he's not the biggest. He's not the strongest. He doesn't have the best shot. He's not the toughest. He's not the most offensive. He's not the most defensive. But we all realized or have realized that his greatest tool is his hockey mind, his hockey smarts, his brain. And that goes a long way with Marty St. Louis, especially. So for all of us that thought that Harris would be eventually the odd man out, is he?
Again, I'm going to go back to what I said earlier about, you know, touchables, untouchables, you know, players that can be moved. I think it all depends. And it's too easy to say, yes, he is the odd man out or he isn't the odd man out.
Yeah.
Let me ask you these questions.
Yeah.
Whoever thought that Chris Chelios would be the odd man out on a Montreal blue line? Whoever thought that Eric Desjardins would be the odd man out on a Montreal blue line? So again, we can debate what those trades meant, what the effect was positively or negatively, right? But you're telling me anybody thought that Chris Chelios and Eric Desjardins would be the odd man out? Like, we just talked about Michael Matheson. Who knows? Maybe it's David Reinbacher that's going to be the odd man out. I don't know.
Let me ask you the question a different way. If you were the GM of this team and X amount of years from now, you want this team to be a Stanley Cup contender, would you be okay with having a 5'11" Jordan Harris, knowing that you already have a 5'7" Lane Hudson?
Well, Lane Hutz.
Well, pardon me. He's not 5'7". He's not 5'7". No,
he's Hutz bigger than that.
He's
right?
taller than that. Yeah. yeah.
Well,
but so, he's I think not it all, that tall.
It all depends what the mix of your team is. If I'm asking Jordan Harris to be a frontline defender and I don't have defensemen that are clearly ahead of him, I don't think that's ideal. But if I have Jordan Harris playing in my bottom pair, carrying significant minutes, he's an excellent skater, he's calm, he's poised, he's smart, and I have support around him, and I also have support for Lane Hutson, I'm okay with that. The Boston Bruins had Matt Grzelcyk and Torey Krug on their blue line.
Like, yeah, he's listed at 5'10", by the way, Hutson, but by all accounts, most people seem to think he's 5'9". But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, whatever, okay. But you had Matt Grzelcyk and Torey Krug. But you had Zdeno Chara on your blue line. You had other players. It's too simple to just say yes or no based on height or based on this or that.
Got it.
It's about the mix.
The puzzle. It's
yes,
about the puzzle.
Yes, it is, Tony.
All right, okay. Hey, in ending... what a race we have between Kucherov and Nathan MacKinnon, eh?
Oh.
Look, McDavid, unfortunately, is not at 100% right now, so he might be a little bit too behind. But the Nathan MacKinnon show the other night, last night, my God.
Well, I mean, the show, I mean, here's the thing let me just say this. I want to say that it was mind-blowing. Watching Nathan MacKinnon last night, because I'm watching that and I'm going, this is the NHL, and he looks like he's out against junior players, right? Like he's just blowing past people. In my view, in this league, there's only two players that can skate past opponents. That's McDavid and MacKinnon.
Correct.
MacKinnon put it on full display last night. It was absolutely incredible to watch the level that he plays at. And certainly, you know, with McDavid sitting out Wednesday night's game versus the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, McDavid made a great run to the Art Ross. I think two things with McDavid, and I'm not trying to get into his head. Number one, he knows the importance of being as ready as possible for day one of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah.
And I think he said, I ain't catching these two guys for the Art Ross. So, you know, good luck to them having the race. I mean, MacKinnon has 4 points coming off into Kucherov's 3 points.
Yeah.
Let me just say one more thing, too. You know, I know Montreal Canadiens fans never really got to see the best of Jonathan Drouin. But boy, has Jonathan Drouin found a home in Colorado.
Oh, yeah. It's the perfect home for him. Really, I don't know if there would have been, to tell you the truth, I don't know if there would have been a fit anywhere else. Like, it's just him and MacKinnon, where MacKinnon will take all the pressure on his shoulders and Jonathan will just be able to breathe freely. And Jonathan looks like he's playing like a kid on a pond right now, like just playing for fun. And good for him. Like I, you know, he showed a lot of great things in Tampa, and, he's showing even more great things now in Colorado, but it just goes to show you some guys just, they can't do it by themselves. They really need to play with a superstar to be able to take that pressure, because some of them just can't take it themselves. And look, Jonathan's got very little pressure on him right now, very little. And if you think about it too, you know, he's at the end of a contract. If he would have a long-term contract and he'd be in Colorado, he'd still feel some pressure then, because he's got it. But right now he's free. He's playing free, and good for him.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. And you know, the right fit. You talk about the puzzle. We're back to the puzzle. You have McCarr, you have MacKinnon, you have Rantanen. You know, Jonathan can slide in to Max LaPierre's comment, right? Like, Jonathan doesn't have to be the best player. He can be the fifth best forward on that team and perform really, really well. And teams need good players that can be your fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth best forwards on a team. And that's all good. But certainly, you know, you watch MacKinnon perform the way he did. And honestly, Tony, like I kept rewinding to just say, did somebody stumble? Did somebody lose an edge? Was there he was just blowing past people. Have you ever driven on the Autobahn in Germany?
No, I've never been to Germany, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, the Autobahn, I'll just tell you how it works. And at night, it's really impressive because you're on the Autobahn and you'll see you're driving at 100, you're driving 200 kilometers an hour, and you see a little flicker of a light coming from way in the distance. And that's somebody warning you, I'm coming at 240 kilometers an hour.
I think
McKinnon needs headlights on his helmet to let everybody know he's coming to pass you.
Hey, after the Canadians' impressive win last night, Marty says to the team, guys, day off on Wednesday. So it's a day off for them. Tomorrow night, they visit Patrick Roy and the New York Islanders, who, speaking of playing for their playoff lives, can you imagine? That one's going to be a really good one, eh? That one's going to be a really good one. By the way, I wouldn't want to play Roy's Islanders if they get in. There's something about Roy, Lamoriello, Lemaire, the brain trust, a real hot goalie, some big centermen. I wouldn't want to play the Islanders, I'm telling you. There's a surprise every year in the playoffs. I think it could be them.
Well, they're back to playing the way they did when they had a lot of success under Barry Trotz. I'll finish with this, Tony, and I'll finish with this. Some teams in this league made a massive mistake not hiring Patrick Roy. Massive mistake. And now you're watching what Patrick
Ottawa
has done. And
Ottawa made a bunch of mistakes.
Oh, no, well, they're one. I'm not saying they're the only one. Yeah. There's some other teams that would have benefited from Patrick Roy as well. And now here he is in Long Island showing his capabilities. That team has not only gotten better since he took over, they continue to get better. I agree with you about the playoffs. They will be a hard team to play against, and they're only going to be better next year with a full season with Patrick behind the bench.
I think Craig Berube is going to be the coach of the Ottawa Senators next year.
Which is fine. I'm a big Craig Berube fan. And Certainly I think that the Ottawa Senators need somebody with that type of credibility. I'll finish with that. And if they could get Joel Quenneville, that would be a better choice than Craig Berube.
Wow. There's something to end the Sick Podcast tonight. Thank you very much, Craig Button. I appreciate it, my man. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, always my pleasure.
All right. There you have it. Once again, the Sick Podcast is brought to you in part by Energy Transportation Group, a leading full-service logistics provider serving all of North America, driven to be different. Also brought to you in part by these guys right over here, Labitte TB, Brewed in Quebec, a winner of a dozen international awards. Labitte TB offers quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients for everyone. Stays Labitte TB, embrace your true nature. Also brought to you in part by Playground. Experience Playground like never before. Enjoy world-class poker, 900-plus gaming machines and weekly events, karaoke Mondays, comedy Wednesdays, live bands on Fridays and Saturdays, and much more. Discover their latest additions, the Etc. Steak House, Drunken Dragon's Exquisite Sushi, the Esperanto Cigar Lounge, and Babel Lounge's Meds and Cocktails. Playground, your ultimate destination for entertainment, just over the Mercier Bridge, only minutes from downtown Montreal. Visit playground.ca for details. And last but not least, in ending, you know all insurance isn't created equal, and that's why I'm going to talk to you about Accent Insurance Solutions, where you find the right solution for you at Accent Insurance. Accent doesn't sell insurance. They shop insurance for you to find the right product, right on the money, whatever your insurance needs, home, automobile, or business. You give them a call. Call the Accent team at 514-363-3636. That's it for us on this Wednesday. And once again, the Montreal Canadiens are in New York to play the Islanders and Patrick Roy tomorrow night. We'll be back tomorrow night, same time, same place at 10 p.m. right after the Canadiens and the Islanders. The guest is still to be determined because I'm working on it. We'll talk to you again tomorrow night, same time, same place. Friend Yellow, Sammy, and Juliana at Master Control. They're Cavallaro. I'm Marinaro.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. La Vida TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination.